Welcome to the Mentors Project podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview the authors of a new series of books where we meet the men and women who mentored Western civilization. This is Dr. Roseanne Welch. For more information, visit mentorsproject.org. Our guest today is Michael Barrick, author of Relentless Visionary, a novel based on the life of Alessandro Volta, the Italian inventor of the electric battery, who discovered methane and clearly excelled as a physicist and a chemist in the late 1700s and early 1800s. So we'll begin, as I always like to begin, with the question of why does Volta matter to us today?
Well, there are several reasons for that. The most obvious is the battery and where we would be without it, or we would probably have it at some point, but he started it and got the ball rolling on battery evolution, basically. And it really did kickstart very quickly after his invention of it in 1799 and 1800, where it sort of got publicized, and up until today, where it continues to evolve.
So how did he come to that discovery?
It was both sort of a slow process, but also somewhat of an eventual process. So from what I've read, since I wasn't there with him, and he actually didn't leave a lot of scientific notes about his process, so some of it is mysterious as to how, say, from 1798 to 1799, he said, okay, this is how I'm going to construct what ended up to be the voltaic pile, which was the first electric battery. He was a lifelong scientist. They actually called them electricians then, and natural philosophers who investigated electricity in various ways over the second half of the 18th century. One of the stimuli, if I can, somewhat of a pun, for it was in the, I think it was the 1780s, there was a big scientific community debate that he was on one side of, basically, and on the other side was a peer and somewhat, I'd call him a friend, colleague, Luigi Galvani, who you'll probably recognize the name as galvanic and galvanizing. And he had this theory that was rather revolutionary of animal electricity that basically came down to frog experimentation. And he found that frog muscles moved when stimulated with electricity. And he came up with this theory that there's an electric property in animal muscles.
Interesting.
That has some validity, and he wrote up his essay on it and sent it out to about a dozen fellow scientists, Volta being one of them, and Volta was really intrigued by it and started to investigate and do his own experimentation, because one of his main things was basically like empirical evidence, which was part of the Enlightenment period that he was full flush in. So he disputed that it was animal-based, but more metallic conductors. And he had previously done experimenting with various metals and their conducting properties. And prior to his battery invention, he was perhaps best known for his list of conductors, where he had like the ones that were the strongest and the weakest, and say, I think copper was towards the top, if I'm remembering right, and zinc was at the bottom, which I mentioned because those were the ones that he eventually used in his piles, because he found strong and weak combined to have the best electrical current.
Tell me, how did his childhood influence him? Were you able to discover anything about what his childhood, what his education was like?
His childhood, I think, sort of drove him to the relentlessness of his career. His father died when he was quite young, left the family with a debt. He had several older siblings who were in the church world. And I'd say like preteen, His family received an inheritance from a wealthier relative, but the control of the inheritance went to the older brother right above him, who was later teens. So he didn't have control of any of the inheritance. So in a sense, he had to forge some way on his own. He also was not interested in the law as his family wanted him to be. He was not interested in the church. He was very interested in science, but also the humanities. He wrote poetry, although the poetry was about science.
Oh, that's fun. He was Bill Nye the Science
yes.
Guy.
His family was also what has been described as lesser nobility. So they had some nobility along the way. And by the time his parents married, they were lesser nobility, which I guess would fall into like the middle class. So they had some education. He was educated in Jesuit school initially at home. The story is that he didn't speak for the first couple of years. So his father thought he was not the brightest child. I'll put it mildly like that. But then once he did start learning, he was a very quick learner and rather ambitious because he wanted to not stay lesser nobility and not really stay in... He was born in Como in the Lombard area of northern Italy, and it seemed like early on he felt it very small town for him. So he strived to break out of that, and science was an avenue for him and also something that he was interested in and had a proclivity for thinking in a scientific way and an inventor's way. One of the things throughout his life was he seemed to like see ways to improve ideas, be it his own or other inventors, scientists. One of the things that he did out of this to sort of create a career for himself was also something that I think makes him relevant for today, was he had a rather modern approach to building his career in a sort of networking way. I think before he was even 20, he wrote to two prominent scientists who each had sort of a different school of thought on electricity. One was Beccheri, who was an Italian scientist who was in sort of the Ben Franklin camp. And then the other one was a French scientist who was well known in Italy. Last name was Nollet. They both were sort of impressed with what he had to say. So he sort of was able to gain some notice that way, but also savvy enough to sort of play hedge his bets onto which side would end up the more established route. So he was very savvy in the way he networked and also later on sort of played the sort of government patronage game, for lack of a better term, to his advantage as a way to get out of Como and see the rest of Europe and meet people, and while doing his job for the Austrian government, who was sending him off into Europe, he was also able to meet people he wanted to meet and talk to them and share ideas and get known, which was all part of how to succeed in science.
It sounds like what he got from his childhood was the motivation, the desire
yes.
to do more,
yes,
which is very interesting. So this is leading me to think about the idea of what relationships in his life fueled him. Maybe these two gentlemen, obviously, and then above and beyond that. Where did he get his inspiration?
Another key relationship in just sort of the scientific world networking aspect of it was a British scientist, Joseph Priestley, who, again, he contacted, and they formed a correspondence, and it helped introduce him into the British scientific community, which was much more welcoming to him initially than the French, where he sort of went first and thought he would find more success. The French scientific community became, I'd say, reluctantly more hospitable to him once he became a favorite of Napoleon Bonaparte, who had a little sway while he was emperor of France over the scientific community of France. So he was very impressed with Volta's invention of, he went and demonstrated it a couple years after he invented it, because he was around 1800, there was still political turmoil in France, and he was sort of waiting for it to settle out a little bit before going over and making his sort of grand presentation to Napoleon. But he was awarded with medals and honors and Bonaparte's stamp of approval, which I think stayed in the French scientific community for a good deal of time. He also had good patronage through the Austrian government and various government levels, officials, but they sort of changed over time. But again, he was, in a sense, politically savvy enough to know, like, okay, let me go and curry favors with this king or this sympathetic government official in Milan and things like that. And then regarding relationships in general, he had a couple interesting relationships with women over the course of his life. Two of them, I would say, were influential in the course of his career. One being, both named actually Teresa. One from his childhood, who he did not marry, but formed a long, lifelong relationship, a friendship with. It sort of was described like she was younger than he was. She married at 20. He was interested in his career at the time. She was shared similar intellectual interests with him, so they stayed in friendship and correspondence over the years. And then the woman he married was 30-some years later, probably, when he was in his late 40s, also named Teresa, seemed like another good partner with him. He wrote some letter around the time of his marriage to the effect of he had a lot of women sort of pursuing him. He was well known at the time and a bachelor. And a lot of the choices had like greater beauty, but this Teresa had sort of like the intellectual interests that suited him, which probably helped because the first 10 years of their marriage, he was not home a lot. Home enough to have three sons. But
they probably corresponded a lot, and that's where they could talk about ideas, right?
And she seemed very, the little let is known, tolerant of his lifestyle as a scientist. So I think those were key relationships in different ways.
Well, that's beautiful. I'm glad to hear that the women in his life had an influence on him, and that we're finding about that slowly more and more. We see how many men who created many things had to have a partner who they could share ideas with. It was a sounding board. Mm-hmm. And the women were probably, that was the best they were going to be offered at the time in terms of their chance to contribute and move things forward. So finding a man like that was equally useful.
Yes. It was also useful because this marriage, his older brother approved of, because it was coming out of a relationship, his first true love affair, perhaps, with an opera singer from a lower class level that did not meet the approval of his brother, who held the purse strings to the inheritance. So with this marriage, he was able to get his 50% of the inheritance, or the rent on property, I think that's what it was, that they got from the inheritance. So it was financially helpful for him to find a suitable mate in a number of categories.
It's amazing how important that was.
Yes.
The class business has been such an important thing across many of these stories. Mm-hmm. That you have to stay within your class. So in the work of biography, one of the hardest things is picking through all the stories that have been posted about people from the past and trying to decide how you are giving the modern reader the fuller or more truthful story. What's the reliable research, and how did you make those choices?
That was a difficult thing, because coverage of events in the 1700s wasn't particularly precisely covered like it would be today with newspapers and magazines and everyone's online opinion. So there were some contradictory timeline of events, holes in information. As I said, Volta didn't really seem to leave a lot of notes about his creation of the battery, so there was some sort of supposition based on his previous work of how he put things together. And even going back to earlier scientific journals of the early 20th century, which was really fascinating to do, but not necessarily solving the problem of when things happened or what things were, or even inventions being given different names. So there I really just had to like choose one to go with and say, this is the name of, I think it was like an electric force, as opposed to going back and forth and getting lost in the minutiae of definitions.
That's so interesting. So that's why you referenced batteries originally as piles. Nobody had the word battery yet.
Right. It wasn't called a battery, although battery was a term that was around from like the military battery and
right,
things like that.
Right, that's what I would think of first.
And Volta had some very elaborate sort of French terms, like the artificial electric organ or something like that, whatever that would be in French. But then battery just seemed to become the term that was used to describe it. And there was some reference to a book from 1803 that referred to Volta's batteries and batteries in general. So just in the course of 4 years, it was pretty much adapted as a universal name.
How interesting.
Although piles was used as well, but it evolved into battery being the general terminology.
I love that. I love the history of words, the linguistic, what the public took on, maybe with the scientific community wanted one thing, but the public picks another, and you've got to go with the popular term.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so interesting. So I have to ask you, what in your background, because you're a writer, brought you to a connection with Volta that made you more comfortable working in this world?
Probably goes back to being a history major in college. And while some of those history muscles haven't been used, had to be strengthened some, the general sort of interest in pursuing history and going back into the past and seeing how things were and how they pieced together. I like piecing stories together from different sources and making it hopefully coherent. It was my history background far more than anything scientific or science-wise, which I'm not, is not one of my strengths.
Mm-hmm. I'm fully happy to say that wasn't my favorite thing, even though, you know, girls can do science and should do science. If you're good at science, go for it. I personally just didn't. And so I understand, coming from it from a historical basis, picking through the stories and creating, mm-hmm. as you said, the puzzle, taking the puzzle and putting it into something more understandable.
Exactly.
Oh, how beautiful. So I have to ask, because Mentoris Project is very interested in mentors, so my first question has to be, who do you think did you find to be Volta's mentors in his career?
Well, I would go back to the three scientists I had mentioned earlier. Particularly early on, it was Nolé and Beccheri. Hopefully I'm pronouncing the Italian and French correctly. Later on, Priestley, the English scientist, was very important. Volta sort of jumped from an Italian scientist to sort of a European scientist. And there was a lot of interesting dissemination of the within the science community of Europe, it seemed, particularly during that time period, of someone does something here and it travels to another country. It was interesting, the sort of viralness almost of his invention of the piles went through like this that summer, even before the British Scientific Journal came out with the official article on it. It had already spread to all these countries.
That's so interesting. Without the internet, something went viral.
Yes. And some of that was also Volta's doing, where he would do demonstrations and in purposely as a promotional way of showing off his invention. I wouldn't count Napoleon as a mentor, but he was hugely influential in the sort of later part of his career, the battery and its sort of aftermath. And I think those were sort of the main mentors. He had a lot of sort of professional relationships with people that were helpful for him over the course of time. I'd say those were the key people in who he looked up to. He later, in sort of a pay it forward type of way, helped younger scientists. And in fact, he had a 40-year career as a professor of physics in the University of Pavia, which is apparently one of the oldest European universities, and was the head of the physics department. And that career, he did that beyond his inventor years, which sort of weirdly ended with the invention of the battery. And he didn't seem to do anything more after that.
Well, that's more than I've done with my inventor.
Yeah, so that's one of those mysteries of the modern biographers that I've read, was like, why did he stop then? And there is, again, a lot of different theories on that. But he continued to be a professor until late into his life.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, exactly, mentoring other, and who knows how many of those people created more things through his influence.
In his sort of retirement from inventing, scientists came to him to visit him at his house in Italy and to talk to him and, in a sense, pay their respects. So he was much admired and revered by the electrical scientist community.
There was such a community, like a salon of inventors.
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. Great. Well, my favorite final question is always, who were your mentors?
That is a good question. And I'd go back to the philosophers. No. particularly in this regard, for this project, but probably in a larger way as well, I think about two college professors of mine. One was Reed Browning, who was also my advisor, and then other history professor at Kenyon College where I went, Peter Rutkoff, because they both looked at history not from like, this is a study of wars and politics, but cultural history. Coincidentally, they both wrote about baseball, which as a baseball fan, I thought, wow, this could be a study of historians and not just journalists or baseball writers, but it has like a legitimacy of study. So it sort of opened up the idea of history, that sort of academics of history on one hand, or the legitimacy of pop culture on the other hand, of something to study. In retrospect, I feel those were sort of significant people and sort of awakening intellectually of me.
Well, that's a beautiful place to stop. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yay. We look forward to the book.
Thanks for listening to the Mentors Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch, and Kathleen Childress designed our website. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorsproject.org and join us for our next conversation.